Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Along with Miles Davis, he helped give birth to cool jazz in the late 40s, Lee Konitz. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and still to come, we'll look at why Starbucks customers may already be tiring of the new Paul McCartney album. But first, he was barely out of his teens when he recorded Birth of the Cool with Miles Davis. You're hearing it in the background. In the 50s, he was one of the few alto saxophonists to provide an alternative to Charlie Parker's rapid-fire bebop sound. Lee Konitz turns 80 this October, but remains radical, consistently taking chances in his compositions and collaborations. He's in New York as part of the JVC Jazz Festival, and he's here in our studio. Lee, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
It's almost 60 years since the recording we were just hearing, and you have gone, deep into the catalog. You've recorded everything from free jazz to classical music. For you, when you're setting out on a project, how do you decide what it's going to be? What kind of music it's going to turn out?
Well, most of the time I'm just looking for a chance to improvise, which is the thing that I'm interested in, and the music. And people invite me to participate in different situations as an improviser. I feel like a sideman who improvises.
So you feel like you can find your way, whatever the musical format is, you can find your way into it.
Most of the time, thankfully, but sometimes it's been not too successful.
Well, you describe yourself as a sideman. How much of the inspiration, how much of the music that you're making in the moment is determined by who's standing on stage with you?
I just came back a couple hours ago from St. Paul, Minnesota, where I played for three nights in a club with local people, and we played very spontaneous music most of the time. I feel as a player, I learn how to play the music by participating in different playing situations.
Well, you have to be not just a great player, you have to be a great listener.
Well, that's very important, and I realized this weekend that sometimes because of some things I was hearing, I was turning off the listening mechanism, and that's very dangerous when you're up on a bandstand in front of people, playing with people. And so I had to stop and just close my eyes and sit and listen carefully and get over the bumps and things that I didn't love too much, and I found a way to fit in with these guys.
All right, well, now the list of your collaborators will range from local musicians in St. Paul, Minnesota, to people like, Bill Evans and Charles Mingus and Gil Evans. For the last 15 years, you've been working with Ohad Talmor?
Yes, that's the name.
He's a reed player himself, but also a composer and an arranger. What does this kind of longstanding, collaboration with him do for you?
Well, it gives me an opportunity to play in an orchestral situation, which is more unusual for me. I usually play in with just a rhythm section. And Ohad is a very talented writer, and it's very stimulating for me to find a way in this music with the string quartet, in one sense, where he adapted some of the French precious composers and said, okay, play some variations on Reverie. But I said, wait a minute, that can sound pretty hokey. It kind of worked out. A friend of mine came to listen to us play at the Knitting Factory once, and he said, I like the music very much, but I wish you would have improvised some. And I said, thank you. It kind of worked then.
So it sounded composed, even though you were improvising it on the spot. There's a generational difference. You're about to turn 80. Ohad is in his 30s.
Yeah.
Does that work against you?
No. It just feels like we're contemporaries, quite honestly, until someone remarks that I'm older. And I like that kind of feeling.
So when you say you feel like contemporaries, you mean you feel like his contemporary. He doesn't feel like he's 79.
We speak and kind of joke around like the contemporaries. You know?
Okay. There's a track called Ohad, which presumably you wrote for him,
right?
Which is recorded by my guest, Lee Konitz, and his new Nonet, recorded live at New York's Jazz Standard back in 2005. Lee Konitz and the new Nonet. Ohad is the name of the piece, a musical tribute to Lee's longtime musical collaborator, Ohad Talmor. The two of them, he is performing with you on Monday night, right, at Carnegie Hall.
Incidentally, I didn't hear me on that record. That little excerpt was all guitar.
Yeah, nice little guitar work there. Lee Konitz, the great alto sax player. And this sort of goes back to what we were just talking about, you know, age difference between you and Ohad seems not to be any kind of a barrier between the two of you, that it seems like you're still learning. I mean, you told another interviewer that you play with local musicians around Europe, sometimes for free, because it's a great way to learn to play.
Yeah, you learn how to play by playing.
And so are you still learning
as you
approach your 80th birthday?
That's the name of the game.
Now, you did a record for Soul Note called Ideal Scene back in 1986, and basically about touring with your own band being sort of an ideal way of learning to play, of getting some ideas across, playing the music that you want. Is that what you're doing now with Ohad and this band?
Well, on Monday, the 25th, we play at Zankel Hall, and on the 26th, we go to Vienna with the Nonet and do some tours in Europe. And then I go someplace else and play with Marcel Solal someplace. And we go to Brazil to play with the string quartet there. And this is actually the busiest year of my 60 years or so.
Really?
Yeah. So I figure, you know, I don't know if this is what they call it, a swan song. I'm going to go out swinging. I do that.
Well, but I mean, it sounds busy. Is it ideal? Is this the band that you want to be playing with right now?
But I'm doing such a variety of things that there's no opportunity to get bored with any of this, and it's all of it is stimulating. So it's not the only thing that's difficult is the traveling, and that's what we get paid for, I feel.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Lee Konitz. Here he is with Ohad Talmor and the band and a track called Sound Lee. They are performing Monday, June 25th, as part of the JVC Jazz Festival at Carnegie's Zankel Hall. Billy Konitz, Ohad Talmor, and the band Sound Lee is the name of this piece. Lee Konitz is my guest on Soundcheck. I guess everybody asks you this question, Lee, but let me stand in line and ask it anyway.
Shoot.
People called you the alternative to Charlie Parker.
Right.
Was it even possible to be a sax player at that time and not be somehow influenced, inspired by Charlie Parker?
Not possible. But I had the opportunity to identify, if you will, with Lenny Tristano, who I was studying with and playing with. And he encouraged me to hear the master playing, but not to be swept away by it, because we were kind of working on alternate things. And that kind of saved me, I think. But I studied his solos and tried to rearrange him, as I understand is the name of that game. If you want to learn something, you study closely the masters and then do something with it.
Mm-hmm. So when people heard you as an alternative to Charlie Parker, it was just that, as you say, you were studying with Lenny Tristano, you were doing a kind of a different thing.
Right.
It wasn't a kind of a statement that, you know, this is somehow better than that. It wasn't an either-or kind of thing.
It's just that I had a totally different lifestyle, and I didn't really identify with the blues in the black tradition, mm-hmm, and things like that. So I was inspired by the great black players and tried to make something personal from it.
Well, in 1949, you made this recording, Subconscious Lee, with the great...
That wasn't my title.
But that's the title. It's on the disc.
Yeah.
Lenny Tristano. You mentioned him. He's at the piano, and this is Lee Konitz in 1949. Subconscious Lee is the name of the tune. It's Lee Konitz, the sax player and my guest on Soundcheck, recorded in 1949 with an ensemble that featured Lenny Tristano on piano. You said that even while you were studying what Charlie Parker was doing, that you and Lenny Tristano were doing something that was different.
It was just what we thought was an extension of what we were learning from the great players before. We were playing basically the Broadway show tunes and writing, you know, solo type lines. That's what is this thing called love, and just extending or continuing what Charlie Parker brought to it.
Mm-hmm. Did you? So it sounds from what you're saying like you didn't set out to start some whole new school.
Not the slightest thought of that. I was personally trying to learn how to play, and I was privileged to have someone I could speak to about it play with also.
Was there also an East Coast, West Coast thing going on?
The writers created that situation, and frequently, because I think the people, as I learned it, heard whoever was playing on the East Coast and were using that. We inspire each other in some way. Mm-hmm. And so the writers put a label on it.
Right. So there was this East Coast, West Coast thing. Of course, you know, it happened 50 years later with rap as well, you know, East Coast, West Coast, and a lot of it in the press. You said that in addition to whatever, you know, stylistic differences there were between you and Charlie Parker, you didn't go for that lifestyle either. Did you mean East Coast, West Coast, or kind of the drug abuse, the hard living that surrounded?
Not the coast thing, the mm-hmm. hard living.
And was it easier because of where you were to you know, avoid all of that stuff?
Because of where I was?
Yeah. I mean, you know, was it a case of you were able to live a different lifestyle just because of geographically where you were located?
We were all on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're asking.
Well, you know, I mean, if you're running with a different circle of people, I guess.
Yeah.
Uptown, downtown, whatever.
Yeah, it was uptown and downtown. I thought you were suggesting that I was on the West Coast.
No, simply to suggest that, you know, distinctions like uptown and downtown, which we also see as new, actually have been going on for a while.
Yeah. I loved Charlie Parker personally. He was a beautiful man who had his problems, you know. Mm-hmm. And as Bill Maher said to Tavis Smiley, when Tavis talked about the steroids that the ball players are taking, Bill immediately said, "I just want to see a home run, okay? I don't care what they have to do it." I wanted to hear Charlie Parker. We all wanted to hear Charlie Parker play great. Living with him would have been difficult, but we were blessed with the records. So. Yeah.
Well, now, you may have been, you know, here on the East Coast for a while, but like so many American jazz musicians, you've gone to Europe and lived there. I mean, it almost seemed like that was, you know, it's what they say about a prophet in his own homeland. Has that changed? And if so, why are you still, you know, in Europe?
Well, because my wife is European, and we go where our wives are. And there's plenty of opportunities to play over there. I keep my apartment in New York, and I'm going there next week. And
but has the situation changed? Because it really did seem, say, in the middle of the 20th century that, you know, you had to go to Europe almost to get discovered, to get, you know, some kind of attention, to be able to make a living doing
right.
what you do.
You still have to do it.
It's still that way.
Although I work more in New York now that I don't live here permanently, which is generally, traditionally the case. Mm-hmm. But, I found a little niche for myself where I could play for a couple hundred people instead of a few thousand. And that makes it possible for me to play, and I'm very grateful for that.
And as you say, you're turning 80 this October, and and you're still touring, perhaps more than ever.
Absolutely, more than ever. I start to worry a little bit about that because traveling for everybody is very difficult these days. But I'm going to be with friends most of the time, and it's.
That makes it easier.
Yeah.
So touring, recording, still, as you said before, still learning to play. Is there a period at the end of this sentence, or you just keep doing it until?
No, I keep doing it until it's all over. Mm-hmm. It ain't over until it's all over. I just wanted to mention, though, about this concert.
On Monday?
First of all, do we have a minute?
Sure.
I am working at Birdland Wednesday through Saturday this week, which was not supposed to happen because you don't work someplace else before a big concert. But somehow they were going to do me as a legendary surprise guest, so to speak. And then I saw an ad in the Times announcing it as my quartet. So I say, wait a minute, something's going wrong here.
I got to find three other guys.
But the concert at Zankel Hall will consist of a Portuguese big band whom we've recorded with. This is my tunes with Old Hads mm-hmm. arrangements. They're flying in with the sponsorship of the Portuguese government.
Great. So it'll be a good time and a big band.
The Nonet is New York. The String Quartet is flying in from Linz, Austria.
Well, let me give people the details. It's Monday, June 25th. It's part of the JVC Jazz Festival. It's at Carnegie's Zankel Hall. featuring the great sax player Lee Konitz, who's been my guest. And Lee, a real pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thanks
very much. And a quick correction to Friday's segment on the JVC Jazz Festival. Due to a research error, we told you about two shows on this year's bill that are in fact not on the schedule, the one involving Steve Miller and Peter Frampton, and the other with Eddie Palmieri and the Ray Barretto Band. We regret the error, and we've posted a link to this year's full program schedule on the Soundcheck website at WNYC.org. Still to come, the Beatle meets the barista, Paul McCartney's new album for Starbucks. This is Soundcheck.